My name is William D. Koumentas, K-O-U-L-M-E-N-T-A-S. Bill. Or a.k.a. George. Everybody calls me George, too. Yeah. I'm 47, turning
48. Okay. And your profession is restaurateur?
Correct.
Okay. Who were your parents and where were they born?
My parents are Helen and George Koumentas. They're both born in Greece. They came here when they were in their early years. They were both very young,
okay.
6 and I think 10. They met in the Greek church in Washington Heights,
okay.
Through the Greek community and so forth, and that's it.
Was the family name changed in any way upon arrival in America?
Yeah, it was. It was originally Koulumentas, K-O-U-L-O-U-M-E-N-T-A-S.
And you spell your name now K-O-U-L-M-E-N-T-A-S,
T-A-S, correct,
right?
Yeah. That was courtesy of the Marines. So we said shorten it up, yeah, like that. During Vietnam.
So it was your grandparents who came with the children?
Correct. I was to escape the Second World War in Greece. So you're thinking, about 43? 44, give or take, I'm not sure.
Billy, did they know anyone when they came here?
They did. My grandfather on my father's side did not. But my grandfather had family in Atlanta that sponsored them to come over. And he actually was another restaurateur as well, and New Way Hot Dogs up in Macon, Georgia, around that area. But they didn't like Atlanta, and they came back to New York. I think it was Flatbush, but I'm not even sure. But then they moved to Washington Heights. That's where my parents met in the church.
So your parents, as children, first settled in Georgia?
My mom's side. My dad's side was always New York. They first came was Brooklyn, and then they went to Washington Heights.
And did they maintain contact with relatives in Greece?
Course, still today.
And when did your grandfather start the restaurant business?
Well, they both started as dishwashers. So when you opened his first store in Brooklyn, I don't remember. I don't know.
That was before your time?
Yeah, way before my time. What happened was my grandfather was always in the restaurant business, and he had a place in Brooklyn. But he put my father first to go on his own. And my dad was a waiter in the Waldorf Astoria for quite a long time. And he did very well there. He actually served almost every president, and even Frank Sinatra. That was one of the guys that he asked for. Anyway, long story short, as we got older, me and my sister, he wanted to give us more than he could. So he decided to go with two friends of his and open his first restaurant, which was George's. He didn't open it originally, he bought it from another family, and they had to be called George as well, so it kind of fit. And then they opened two more stores. One was in Forest Hills, and the other one was in Jersey, on Route 4. The partnership broke up. There was three of them all together. They broke up, and my dad kept George's for himself.
Did members of your family ever live down here?
I lived down here for a while, in 20 Pine Street, until approximately 4 years ago I left. And the reason was because my kids, you know, I kind of felt bad they were playing ball in Chase Plaza. Forget in the backyard and the freedom of the bikes and so forth, you know.
One time when we were at a friend's meeting, you mentioned a gentleman with a handlebar mustache. I think he was Greek. Can you tell us about him?
Oh, yeah, Nick. It was two brothers that started George's, and they had another place as well, which is not that far away. It's the store right next to me. I think it's Charlie's now and Steve's Pizza, Cedar Street. So now these two brothers, one had that store and one had this store. They were Greek. They barely spoke English, but they worked hard. And that shows you how it's changing a little bit, because like my grandfather, he was a mayor in his town in Greece, and my other grandfather, he had a lot of land, and they both left prominent lives to come to this country, and they went straight to work as dishwashers and clerks. There was no handouts. They just did what they had to take care of their family. And my grandfather, who was the mayor, he took such pride in himself going to work as a dishwasher. They would wear a suit. And then even to this day, Smith and Walensky, they promote him to the guy in charge of the coats. Well, he passed away, and in his honor, they put his name, Gus's Corner, in the restaurant above the coats.
Who was that?
My dad's father, Gus Priovolos, P-R-I-O-V-O-L-O-S.
And he was mayor of what town?
Gabinisi. It was called a small village, Mikro Kuro, from the mountains. And my dad's from Kalamata, which is the southern part. So it was very unique that both sides of the family, I had both experiences where I had the mountain of Greece, and then I had also had the beaches of Greece. Because Kalamata is like, I would compare it to Florida. was in the mainland of the country, and it was like the southern part.
Do you know if your father ever experienced prejudice in the area here?
No. Well, my father, he was very Americanized. He came here when he was like 6, 7 years old. He was a Marine in the military during Vietnam. But maybe my grandparents, but they never spoke about it, I'll be honest.
When your father bought the restaurant, was it still sort of a multi-ethnic neighborhood down here? Was it mostly commercial?
Mostly commercial. I remember the whole dynamics. It was like in the weekend we would close at 3 o'clock. It was all the blue coats from the exchanges and the banks and so forth.
What year was it that he opened?
He bought it 81. 81. I was 11 years old, approximately. But I was working with him when I was 7, because he always wanted to have that work ethic, that nothing's for free.
And he served in Vietnam before all this?
He was very fortunate. He was drafted into the Marines, but he was very good as a typist. So he was stationed in California. The general would not let him go. So every time his orders came to go to Vietnam, they were denied. So he did his tour in the United States. So he's very fortunate on that.
Do you have any idea of why it was that your ancestors went into being dishwashers? Was it because those jobs were easy to get, or because...
That's exactly what it was. They didn't have the language. They couldn't speak English very well. And that's what they did. And that's why, you know, a lot of Greeks have restaurants. Because when they first came over here, who owned the restaurants at the time were the Jews. And the Greeks were basically the workers, the majority in the restaurants. And as time progressed, they became the owners, and then the Jews went on to become the wholesalers, selling to the restaurants. And now what's happening, you see more Spanish people becoming restaurateurs because it's just like a natural progression.
How old were you when you first started working with the
I would say 7, 8. I was a dishwasher helper, then I was a dishwasher, and then I was a delivery boy. Basically every aspect of the restaurant.
And where were you living at the time?
Queens, in Bayside.
Were there a lot of Greeks there?
Not as much, no. A lot of Greeks were in Astoria and Jamaica.
And what inspired you to stay in the family business?
Well, what happened was I left the family business and I had a career in Citibank. I got my master's degree. I did a lot. And what brought me back was 9/11. What happened was the building moved, the hairline fracture, when the World Trade came down.
When did that happen? How long after?
A year later. And we didn't realize it. And we had the city check it out with engineers and everything passed. There was no problems. But when the trains reopened, the vibration caused us to crack. And the city didn't want another building coming down a year later so close to the World Trade. So they said you have basically 3-4 hours to fix it on a Saturday, which was physically impossible, or we're taking you down. And that's what happened. It was more of a shock that we just came down and it was bad. And then it was very dramatic for my father, you know, just to see all his life work go down in rubble. And then the insurance company goes, well, you had 3 hours to fix it. Why don't you try? And that's how it started. Then we had to sue them, of course, and we won. But it was very dramatic, and that's how I came back into the family fold, into the business.
Was your father active in the restaurant after that?
He was, but when the building came down, it took something from him, and he just couldn't do it anymore. And that's why I simply took over the reins.
Did he own the building?
He did.
When he took over in 81?
He did not. He rented it from the original guys. And when the old man passed away, his children went to my father and said, listen, would you like to buy it? My father goes, sure. And that's how we took over as a family.
What year did he buy it?
It was literally a year before 9/11. So that's why it was very dramatic for him, because, you know, he just bought the building and then 9/11 occurred. We were always down here, but he put all his finances into down here. And then a year later, 9/11 occurred. And then a year after that, we came down.
When he started the business, how was the business? Was he making money?
Yeah, we were doing well. George's always had a good following. Because it's not rocket science. It's good food, good environment, clean, you know, bright, and good quality. And we just always did well. But we always worked hard. It was nothing free. And it's like a curse and a blessing. The blessing is, if you know what you're doing, you're going to make money. But the curse is you lose your life. Because it's nonstop. And it's still nonstop, like we discussed earlier. There's so many factors now getting involved between developers trying to come into the neighborhood and demanding what they want to do or feeling it's there right now. But not forgetting, hey guys, we were here when it was rubble. Now it's all progressing. Now you want to go, I want to take it from you? It's ludicrous. It gets me very upset. The fact that you have to go through this instead of just doing what's right. Like this developer now, he's getting into a tiff where he's suing me right now in federal court because he's not getting what he wants. Not that he's going to win, but why do I have to go through the aggravation? But now I got to deal with this individual who doesn't want to pay what the norm is and feels it's his right or his entitlement. And how dare I stop? It's crazy. Because why wouldn't I want a hotel with 170 rooms next door to me? Of course I wouldn't want that. But because of my experience, and because of what we went through as a family, I got to make sure that this building's protected. And not just let him run rampant and do whatever he wants.
Yeah.
And that's what it comes down to. It's not stopping progression. It's simply taking and making sure that things are done properly. Because, for example, Sims, down the block, going to construction, right? Look at Woogie's. They punctured his basement, right? I mean, come on. It floods with the waters and so forth. I remember the World Trade, the first one, not being finished yet, okay? So I've seen the dynamics of this neighborhood as a child. So I've seen the spectrum just evolve. And I tell you, I remember as a child, on this block alone, there was maybe four diners. You had Moran's, you had the Trade Center Diner, you had so many places. You had next door the Blarney Stone, and you see it how it's just gone. And I'm like the last man standing, in a sense. Because there are how many diners are left in this area. What I'm saying is that what's happening right now, this whole area is changing dramatically. And I don't know if it's good or bad in a sense. Only time will tell. But from what I saw as a child to where it is today, we're losing the mom and pops. Even myself, it's getting harder. I close George's at 5 o'clock because financially, I can't afford to keep it open past that. And now the politicians are forcing big business to come in and forcing guys like me to leave. And I'm getting phone calls left and right about stores that are going for sale or they're simply shutting down. So you're losing people like me because it's getting to the point that it's not fun anymore. It's not just working. You have to deal with bureaucracy. You have to deal with
stress.
And then you have nonsense, you know, like the Board of Health changing. It's all about making money. It's not about what's right. But when the foreign money stops coming in, then what happens? And then you lose people like me. And then what happens? Is it Starbucks? Then you lose the culture of the neighborhood.
Very much so.
Right?
Very much so.
For example, you could come and say, Bill, oh my God, I forgot my wallet. All right, no problem. Hey guys, eat. I'm not going to worry about it. But try doing that in McDonald's or Starbucks. See what they tell you. Like, give me the food back. All right? And that's where you lose the culture where you know the name, the faces. If you're in trouble, can we help you? Or, oh, Bill, can you do me a favor? I forgot. Can you send me over a bounty? Or a friend of mine goes, oh, I forgot avocado. Can you? Of course, yeah, take some avocado.
Now, I remember, I think it used to be open late.
It used to be 24 hours.
Yeah, because I used to think when I first moved here, because it was, the streets were dead, if I ever needed help, I could go to George's.
Yeah, yeah.
If someone was following me, I could go into George's. And
yeah,
you know.
And unfortunately, it's going away more and more and more, and it's sad. I always say that. New York City is a very large metropolitan area, but each neighborhood is like a small like town within a town, and I could walk down the street and I know how many people, because my customers became my friends. It's like family in a sense, and that's why it's very hard for me to let go, because I was offered a lot of money to sell this place many times, and I could retire in a sense, but I'm not. But how many times can somebody get punched? Right? You have Hurricane Sandy, you have 9/11. Then you have the city coming at you. And so wait a minute, guys. Whoa. Make it easy for small business. Because once you take that away, you lose the foundation. It's sad.
Philly, go back for a minute. What year did you leave to go get your master's?
No, I got thrown out of the business. My dad goes to me, you're Bill, I'm George. And he goes, you have a brain in your head. Go figure it out. And he threw me out. He goes, you're not working in George's anymore. It was my third year of college. So what year was that now? 92. So my first job was working for Metropolitan Life Insurance, basically selling insurance door to door. And I did very well at that. And Chase picked me up and I worked for Chase. They paid for my MBA, they paid for everything for me. And then from there, Citibank picked me up. And I was basically in charge of Westchester and the Bronx for a period of time. And that's when I came back here.
Going back to when you were much younger, what were your earliest memories of the neighborhood?
Oh my God, it was all office. The whole neighborhood died after 4 o'clock. It was very quiet. George's was 24 hours back then because we used to cater to the sanitation, the police department. They would come in the middle of the night, about 2 in the morning, 3 in the morning. transit workers and so forth, more city employees. It was mostly very robust area during the day, Monday through Friday, between the two exchanges. I remember the World Trade, the original, not being completed yet. Battery Park was just gateway at the time. And they started building it, which is all flat land. Yeah, it was just a different area. Totally night and day to what it said.
Were there any other group establishments around?
There was. There was other diners, like I said earlier. There was a lot of Greek community where they would come in, like all the owners. They would play cards like every Friday night. They'll come here or they'll go there. They'll take turns. And it was like they stuck together. Where it was more like help in a sense, where they were like a family. Even though they were competitors, but they were really, really competitors. If you needed something by that big, all right, go to a John's place. Go get a box of ketchup. It's changing dynamically very, very quick. Maybe that's progress. I don't know. But I liked it when it was more of a family. And you still have it in a sense where I know a lot of people, but they're hanging out by a thread. Like, for example, in this neighborhood, I remember it was Jane. She had the gallery. Now they're up in 120 Broadway. Then he had also the jewelry store, the two young girls. They're also on Greenwich Street with family businesses. And we all grew up together. But they're all looking to get out. And it's about people who've been in this neighborhood for how many years? The market, next to the pizzeria, right in the market, he's gone. And Steve's been in the neighborhood since I was a kid. He started in 19 Rector. He was on the corner where the pizzeria place is now. That was his place. It was a diner. And then he moved over here. Things got tough for him, so he switched over from food establishment to a sort of a market. And even now, he's like, I can't do it. And you talk about people who've been here forever. People say, well, you know, times are changing. But you're talking about people who've been around for 30, 40 years, not just 5 years. So they know what they were doing because they maintained it for 30, 40 years. So what's actually happening that's pushing these people out that have been a staple of this community? And why am I thinking about leaving? Because it's outside forces that are coming in and they're destroying the mom and pop. And we're becoming like Ohio. But that's what it is. And that's why it's very sad. And it's great what you guys are doing, trying to maintain it. But 50 years from now, that's what we're going to have.
Were there any business organizations in the area that were started by Greeks?
We had the Hellenic, the restaurants, Hellenic Society, and that was sort of a communication between all the restaurateurs. But everybody's worked hard. Like, my dad would wake up 4 in the morning, be here by 6, leave here at 6. Time he gets home, 7 o'clock, and then do it again the next day, and then the next day, and the next day. And that's how the Greeks worked. It was very, very hard work. Like, I remember when my dad took a little offense to it. He's like, you know what? You work so hard. Nothing is given to you in this country. You have to work. But you have the opportunity to work. And if you do work hard, you get rewarded. That's the idea of why we're here, not in Greece now.
What can you tell us about St. Nicholas Church?
The original St. Nicholas, that was the church we used to go to. Again, community. It was great. I remember as a kid, we used to service them every Sunday morning with the donuts and the bagels and all that. And of course, during Easter, we walk around. You know,
tell us about that.
It was reminiscent of the old country, in a sense. And that's how we did it in Greece. And they simply copied that downtown. And the church was, I think it was the most beautiful church. It was old, boutique-ish, you know, had a lot of history to it. And they tried to maintain it, and they did, for quite a long time.
So this was an Easter procession
At night. And they blessed the neighborhood, and the priests would walk in different stores and bless the stores going out.
And did they do the throwing of the cross?
Yes,
the
they did. And they would go and jump in there and pick it up. Yeah, and it was great because, think about this, downtown Manhattan, financial district of the world, right? And they had this situation where they had a little church, culture, vibrant. It was like that same experience you would have it in a village in Greece, and you had it downtown. And we were very fortunate to have it for many years.
And you always went to St. Nicholas Church? Or?
Yeah, all the time.
Do you remember any of those celebrations or festivals?
Of course, of course. Listen, it was a neighborhood. It's like a village in a big city. That's what I consider downtown, a village in the big city. And people loved it because it was quiet. And you got up on a train, you could be anywhere in the city within minutes. People just loved it downtown. But 9/11 changed everything at that point. It really did.
So when did you find that there were more residences here?
After 9/11, yeah, because the real Wall Street moved to Jersey City, all the back offices and so forth. And with technology, they didn't need to be downtown anymore. And that whole market changed too. I'm hearing stories that the New York Stock Exchange, they might make it to a catering home.
Were you or your father father at the restaurant on 9/11?
My dad was in Greece, and he was flying back that day. I was working in Citibank in Astoria, and my sister, Maria, came here. We always kept a family member in the store. And she called me up, and she goes, "Where are you?" I go, "I'm in the bank." She goes, "Look at the window downtown. Plane just hit the World Trade. I'm going to close George's down." And I said, "Don't close George's. Don't worry." Because I was thinking back like in 92. No one thought the building was going to come down. I thought we were going to get crazy busy because they're going to evacuate the towers like they did back in the 90s, the first bombing. And then the second plane hit. And I'm like, "Oh, God." And everything shut down very fast. I remember I had to walk across Queensboro Bridge. So I lived on 38th Street at the time. And like, you couldn't get down. Everything shut down. Military took over. And I remember her coming to my house, thank God.
She walked?
From here to 38th Street. Yeah. Yeah, and she just started crying. She just hugged me. I said, "Thank God you're alive." And my dad had no clue what was going on. And then what happened was the plane was coming into the States. Over the Atlantic, they turned around. The pilot goes, "America's under attack." They closed their American borders and went back to Greece. So now imagine what my father's saying, "What's going on?" So they went back to Greece, and he calls me up, my dad. He goes, "Listen, we better go open George's." I go, "Dad, I don't think you understand how bad it is." And then I think we're the first store that opened up down here. We opened up within 5-6 days. We're the only place down here because it was considered the red zone back then. And we were giving waters out and masks.
What was your first experience getting back into the restaurant, and how much cleanup did you have to do?
Oh, forget it. It was major cleanup. And I remember the World Trade. We were given a sort of a showing of it, of when it really happened. You still saw like the smoke coming out and so forth. It felt like a movie set, total destruction. And I remember we knew a lot of the people in the fire department, the police department. So we called a couple of people up, and they gave a special clearance to come through security. Because first you had a Canal Street checkpoint, then you had the Seaport checkpoint, and you had different checkpoints, which were all by the police and fire department. But as soon as you came here, it was controlled by the military. And I remember literally the second day I got through all the checkpoints, and I remember a guy stopped me, full-blown soldier. And he said to me, "Well, how'd you get so far?" And he goes, "You better speak proper English." I go, "Calm down, see this key?" It opens the store right down the block. And I said, "I'm just coming here to get my insurance papers. I want to leave." And he goes to me, "Let me escort you out now because we're arresting people." Because now all the stores were closed and people were coming in to loot and so forth. And the military came in and took control of the whole area. My father came back. He flew in, I think, the following day. As soon as they were allowed back in, he got on the first plane out. So I think about 5 days, we opened up. It was such a major cleanup, too.
So when you opened, though, after 9/11, it was mostly fire department and...
Oh, yeah, it was a lot of military. It was fire department, police department, sanitation department, a lot of, I would assume, Secret Service. There's a lot of people.
Were you giving food away at that point?
No, in the beginning we were. We were giving away waters, masks. I had a friend of mine who's a major plumbing company. So he used us to sort of donate through us to give it out. Yeah, it was just dramatic. But we also came together as a group. That's why I'm going back, you know. People forget that. People come by every 9/11 and it drives me nuts. They're like, "How you feel?" So, "How do you think I felt during 9/11? We lost a lot of good friends. I don't want to think about it. You never forget. You know, they're smiling, I'm taking pictures. I'm like, come on, we get these guys. And people forget how bad it was. And we all came together back then. Like, I remember with Brian and Morantz, he couldn't get his bread. So we were giving him bread from here because we were the cutoff. So he couldn't get his stuff, deliveries down there or anything like that. But I didn't be like, "Okay, Brian, we're not giving you any food." No, we helped. Fast forward how many years? Now it's like Emerald City. Now it's beautiful. It's great. But wait a minute now. The people who suffered are being pushed out now? That's what gets me upset. And Greenwich became the hotspot because the first floor they made in the original World Trade, there was no pass-through. So now they realize that and they fix it in this time. So that's why Tribeca is connected with the financial district. We can walk right through. So that's why everybody's changing their addresses now to Greenwich. Like 2 Rector is now 101 Greenwich. 88 Greenwich used to be 19 Rector. As people change their addresses to Greenwich now, on purpose. And I remember back in the 80s, it was amazing how on this side of World Trade was safe, but on the other side, it was very dangerous. Before Tribeca really blew up. And there was a lot of robberies and a lot of theft going on.
Was the restaurant affected by Sandy?
No, we were fine. When we built back the building, we put French drains around the perimeter. Because I remember in the old days, when it was a heavy flood or the sewers backed up, all the old buildings never had proper structure. So we said we're going to do it and put pumps in as well. So we were not affected. Plus, this is God's land. What really got affected, if you look back during Sandy, was all landfill properties. It was God's way of saying, this is not your land. And that's what happened. And we were fine. But the problem was, everybody around us was destroyed. So it was very tough.
So once you were open after 9/11, how was business? Because other businesses were having a lot of trouble.
It was very tough. Because people weren't coming back down here. A lot of the corporations left. And then we returned. They found it cheaper and more structurally to stay in Jersey. It was very, very tough going. I'll give you an example. When we first opened up after that, we had two waiters for the entire store.
And your employees, they didn't all come back?
No, they did not. Because it took us about 2.5 years, 3 years to build back. Because we were a small building. So it wasn't the city's priority to have us first. So the gas hookups, this and that. We had to wait. You know, over and over again. And that's what killed us, the delays. They didn't make it easy.
So you stayed open, and about how long was it? Tell us about the crack and what happened.
Well, when 9/11 occurred, there was a crack in the foundation by the corner of Rector and Greenwich. Anyway, long story short, we didn't even know it, hairline fracture type situation. We realized that when the train, the 901, the vibrations cracked us. And then we saw the corner going more like tilting like this way. And then the fire department came in, they go, listen guys, you have 3 hours to fix it. And then the building department came in and they said they didn't want another building coming down a year after the anniversary of 9/11, so they brought us down. It was, I remember, it was during baseball season. We went to the baseball game. So it had to be in August or July. It was summer.
Of 2002.
Two.
And tell me about the whole process of having to knock it down.
There was no process. The city knocked it down itself. There was no process. They just gave us the bill for demolition. So it was just, it was gone within hours.
Everything inside?
Everything.
Salvage?
Nothing. So, it's complete destruction. Yeah.
What about, like, papers or records? Or couldn't go?
No. They said the building was condemned. No one goes in the building. And that was it.
And how did you manage to rebuild? You had insurance?
Of course we had insurance. Well, we sold everything we owned. My dad did. He literally sold everything. And that's how we did it. It was very tough.
So you had some real estate?
Yeah, yeah. But we were so determined to stay here. He could have sold out. It probably was still worth money. He could have sold. But he said, no, I'm going to build. And he sacrificed everything he had. That's why it's so disheartening to what's going on today. Like, guys, come on. What are you doing? Now you want it from us. Now it's valuable, but you didn't know what it took to get to this point.
And you brought the business back here.
Yeah.
Now, he only built 3-4 stories. How come he didn't build a giant hotel?
Well, we didn't have the money, number one, to do it. Plus the floor plan. If you went past a certain level, you need 2 stairwells to get out. Change the whole dynamics. So we lost a lot of space on it. And if we went higher, we needed an elevator, losing more space. So we did it to maximize the floor plan.
Is there another generation that might be interested in taking over the restaurant?
I wouldn't let that happen.
You're it.
That's it.
Not your kids, not your sister's kids?
No. I can't say that. I don't know. Maybe they will. But I don't foresee us being here for them to take it over, I'll be honest. Because like I said, it's getting way too difficult. Just the bureaucracy and, you know. It's all a tax. It's like about making money. Money, money, money. You know what I mean?
So how long did it take you to rebuild?
3 years took us to rebuild.
And tell me about the reopening. Did you keep your employees?
No, we did not. They all found jobs. They all moved on. 3 years, 3 years.
Yeah.
And I don't blame them. We had 2 that came back with us. But it was a new beginning, new store, new everything.
Do you have any stories you'd like to tell us about the restaurant life, customers being on the Lower West Side?
Well, listen, like I said earlier, everybody's family in a sense. It's great. It's really unique being here as long as we have been here. And I don't see people as customers. I see them as friends. But I'm feeling the tightness where it's getting harder and harder. It's tough. Even insurance companies. They raised my insurance because the museum opened across the street, the Tribute Museum. So they raised my insurance. Can't win. So I was like, how much can I charge for an egg? Right?
As long as we're asking about customers, do you have any stories?
Yeah, of course. George's became a spot where you have celebrities coming in here, athletes come in here. Colin Quinn's a good friend of mine. Paul Kobe Bryant from the radio, KTU. He's a regular here. And they come in, and you never know they're here. And it's funny, there was a basketball player on the second floor, and a kid just looked up at him and he goes, and it was adorable.
Billy is putting his finger to his mouth, indicating that to be quiet.
But it was great. It's a unique situation. Everybody comes here, from the bum in the street to the mayor of New York, to celebrities, to the person who works in an office job. And the biggest compliment I get is from people overseas who make it a point of coming here. And they come here once and they'll stay uptown the next time they come to New York or whatever it is, but they always make a point of coming back to Georgia's.
Have you ever been written up in any of the travel guides?
Almost every one of them. We had the place to eat, top five places in New York. That's how people find us. And it's their word of mouth that pushes it, not us. I don't pay for anything like that or, you know. Us being here as long as we have, us running it like the way we've been running it, it's a unique situation.
Okay, I want to hear about the opening when you reopened.
It was like a celebration in a sense. We tried to do it, a soft opening first so we could get the kinks out and the systems and, you know.
Do you know the date that you reopened?
I don't remember exactly. And I do remember one thing that was very dramatic that touched me very well. The first day we opened up, we were packed. A lot of support from the neighborhood and so forth. And I remember when my dad went to the second floor of the restaurant, everybody just got up and started clapping. Yeah. That was a very touching moment. And that showed the love of the neighborhood. And a lot of companies gave us a lot of business. I remember another company, they said basically, everybody eats at George's. And that's it. And it was very, very warm and welcoming.
You came back to work after 9/11 or after the building was rebuilt?
Me?
Yeah.
I came back after the building was rebuilt. I came back into the business. Because my dad just couldn't do it. It was just too much. It was more emotional than anything else. It was, you know, your retirement age coming up and everything you had is gone. All right? It's tough.
Why don't you tell us also about Sandy?
Sandy, we were okay. Thank God. The store was structurally fine. There was no flooding. There was nothing. The problem was with us. What affected us, we were in the same grid with the World Trade. So when they closed the World Trade, out of fears with the electricity, they cut us off as well. So we lost power. On a side note, when they opened the power first, it was the World Trade. We got power first here. So it was like a give and take. But everything around us was destroyed. And we had no phone service or internet service either for quite a long time. Because Verizon at that point had all the regular phone lines, but they wanted to change the Fios, so they weren't doing it. So we had no communication with anything. And that was tough on us too, because everything's internet-based and phone-based, and it was just, it hurt us a lot, the business was.
Was the restaurant actually closed though for a period of time?
It had to be closed, because we had no power.
Right.
And plus we got evacuated. That wasn't long at all, it was about 3 days, give or take.
Okay.
We had to be evacuated out of here. There was no way we could stay here. But it took a while to come back. It just, again, rebuilding, you know, 9/11 and Sandy, and you gotta rebuild again, and you gotta do this, and it gets too tiring. I'm 47, turning 48 now, and I shouldn't be tired. But it just, everything else around, like every day, is something new.
Can you retell the story of what happened with the health department?
Oh, sure. That's when they changed the systems over. It used to be like 24 points, give or take, and then they made it to 13 points in the ABC. My God, the Board of Health used to be like our friends in a sense. They would come in here, guys who knew what they were doing, guys who'd been around forever. And they would come in and they would say, okay, this is an issue, that's an issue, that's not an issue, that's perfect, that's great. And then they'll come back 2 weeks later and inspect the one piece that was an issue, let's just say, right? Let's make sure you fixed it. Fast forward, Bloomberg takes over, he fires all the old timers because they're making too much money. And he brings in all these young people out of college, paying them $30,000 a year, with a biology major. That's all you needed to qualify. They had no idea about anything with food or anything whatsoever. I had situations where they'll put a thermometer into somebody's food plate. I'm like, what are you doing? I could go on and on and on. Anyway, long story short, there was an agent that came in here and I knew he was looking to teach me a lesson. And it was proven too. Because what happened was his girlfriend was here prior. They worked together in the Board of Health. And she was an inspector. And I said to her, basically, you don't know what you're doing. She got insulted. She tells her boyfriend. He comes in, teach me a lesson. Cause he said that to other people because there was a big investigation done. He was looking to close us down, and I saw him doing that. So I started videotaping him. And he literally shut us down where I lost my temper, ready to kill him. And then the cops came, I knew the cops, and they go, we're going to lock you up, don't do it, blah, blah, blah. But where they made the mistake is that I happen to know David Silverman very well from the New York Post. So David came in here with a crew, same day, and walked around the store videotaping everything. Because if it's so bad and you close it down, so from a nay to a closure, so the next day I was on the second page of the Post.
Yeah,
second day of the Post. And then who picked that vinyl? Danny. Who's Danny? Another customer of ours, 1010 Wins. He had me on the loop every hour. So from a nay to a closure to a nay, all in 2 days. It's crazy. So they closed me down Friday, reopened me Monday. Again, it's about a money machine. It's not about what's right. But now they started going after things that has nothing to do with food. So you see a grade, might be a B or a C or whatever it is, but that might not necessarily mean that it's the food. For example, they came in and said, well, down by the stove downstairs, there's a lever for emergency cutoff by the fire department that you cannot close it off. Because government is a fire, you have to be able to shut it down. They cited me for that, the Board of Health, saying it's not open. I go, but if I close it, I'm going to get a fine from the fire department. And they're young kids and they don't know. My last inspection, I'll give you an example. My condenser from the pipe got broken, it was busted up, and my plumber's fixing it. She was more concerned about them fixing the pipe than checking the food temperatures or anything like that.
I just want to ask where you see yourself and your business in 10 years.
It won't be here in 10 years. I see myself basically maybe somewhere south, Florida, Texas, give or take. Basically my time and my family, my kids.
Is there a date at which you would retire?
I'm never going to retire. That'll never happen. I just can't stay home. But it won't be like this kind of level. Because like I said earlier, it's a curse and a blessing. The blessing is you make money if you know what you're doing. The curse is you lose your life. You're always on call, no matter what.
And you had the other business. Do you have other businesses now?
No, that was the last one. We opened the pizzeria. We had the bed and breakfast, but no more. My goal at the time was open one store a year in the neighborhood. But now it's like, same with George's, and that's it. It's bad.
It's tragic.
It really is. The job is not the problem. That's the best part. That keeps me going. It's not the work. It's everything around it.
Tough business.
Yeah.
In the best of circumstances.
Correct.